it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
It is sentencing day for Rex Heuermann, the Gilgo Beach killer. Asa Elrup not going to be present at the courtroom, but she's already said a lot. She said enough. We'll get into to some of that. But today we're going to kind of take a retrospective look on the case and where it all sits from here. What's going on next? What can be gleaned off of the story of Rex Heuermann? Because Rex Heuermann sat across from his ex-wife in a jailhouse visit. She asked him how many women he killed. He said eight, didn't pause, didn't finish. Told her seven of them died in the basement of the house she still lives in. Room she goes and sleeps in, the kill room, made into a nice beanie baby filled lair or bedroom or whatever you want to call it. The daughter Victoria says she believes he most likely did it. Asa's own lawyer has said she may never quite get there. Although Asa has accepted it, she's still seemingly buddies, at least the last time she was on the Netflix documentary calling him Mr. Heuermann. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to help us dissect this. Let's talk about Asa here initially. Obviously, he's pled guilty. He's facing his sentencing the day that we are recording this. He's confessed to her face. She, for the longest time, sat there, though, and said, you know, I don't know it's him or if that's good, that's him. I think she might accept it a bit more now. But I mean, really, what's going on in a mind like that when you've told yourself that story for so long that it couldn't possibly him? And then even him is telling you it's me. And she may verbally say, OK, you know, I accept it now. But is she really? I mean, are the mechanisms, are her emotions in her brain, are they all flipping over the same way her surface level is saying, yeah, he did it?
I think she's a wonderful example of how the human brain is capable of extraordinary acts of avoidance and compartmentalization. Yeah. I mean, it's glaring with her. She is such a damaged woman, and she was damaged when he met her. You know, we know from her background, she was abused, neglected, had, you know, no one wanted her as a child. And this was a vulnerable target for him. And I think she built her whole life around her identity of being married to this wonderful family man. And so there's a compartmentalization going on within her still, I think. We saw in the documentary a therapist who I think was doing excellent work trying to help her and trying to get her to see the truth. But there are still probably parts of her, you can almost say it's like dissociation, where she just still has love for the part of him that she holds as, you know, the family man that cared about her.
Yeah, because she still thinks there's a part of him that's separate than that. Anyway, Siobhan, what do you think that she was doing behaviorally earlier in her life and then continued, obviously, throughout her life that drew Rex to her, that said to him, without her even saying any words, that this is the person I'm going to manipulate the living hell out of so I can take advantage of her?
Mm-hmm. I would guess that she always has come off, and particularly with him, as very dependent. You know, she saw him as the tall, dark, her words, tall, dark, and handsome knight in shining armor, which I don't think any of us would have looked at it quite that way.
That's your Shrek.
Yeah, but that's how she was looking at it. And probably just a very dependent person looking for help would be my guess.
I'm trying to walk through, I mean, the process here of how she does this. I think what you said early on here, the extreme, you know, acts of avoidance that the human brain is capable of. You said something of that nature. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's amazing how much one can avoid these sort of things. I mean, so what's going on here? Like when she's having when he confesses to her, and she's processing this and then sits down and tries to have a conversation with him, or he calls and she's like, "Hello, Mr. Huerman."
Yeah.
In the really weird, almost playful tone. What's signaling here to her? She knows he said that he's done this. There's all the evidence that he's done this. He's charged with it. It's all there. He's admitted to it. So what is flipping there? I mean, is the avoidance, is her brain literally not even taking that into account to process he did all of these things? Is it just flipping over to the Rex that she knew, the family man version of Rex? And there's, and she, I get how you might want to go with her and think, well, what about this? But it feels like this is more than just a what about moment where it's like, well, what about this? This is like the other one just doesn't exist in the same room. Like she can process them, but they have to be processed separately, talked about separately. I mean, it's a version of splitting, I guess,
you know,
looking at it. But I mean, is that really what's going on here when she's feeling her love, if you will, for Rex? And demonstrating it, is her mind 1,000% void of the tainted reality of who he is?
I think you put that beautifully, Tony. Good instincts on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like in her mind, and she doesn't do this consciously. It's just sort of her defense mechanism. There are two Rexes. And one she clearly still has an attachment to. She speaks to him with warmth. And then there's Mr. Huerman, where she can sort of be grounded in reality for maybe brief moments and try to wrap her head around it and try to understand it. But I think she does split. She goes back and forth between the good Rex, the man she's always known and loved, the family man, the wonderful father, and this other Rex that she still has a lot of denial that he exists. You know, in the documentary, there were so many times, I know I've mentioned it before, when she does these this eye closing thing.
Where
she says, you know, I don't believe, early on, she says, I just don't believe it. I don't believe it. It can't be true. And that's, you know, physical manifestation of what's going on up here.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we covered this topic of love because we've used that word a few times today, a lot during Corey Richens, especially during the sentencing, because she talked about loving her boys. And then we defined love of Corey Richens as control. What would you think that Asa defines love as?
She would probably have a very hard time putting that into words because I think for her, it's loyalty. I like the word attachment because,
yeah, I was thinking that too, attachment.
You know, she's got a very deep attachment to him. And it's probably, for her, he's part of her identity. You know, she spent close to 30 years with him. In essence, she matured with him. And it's as if losing him, losing that attachment to him, is losing a part of herself. She doesn't know who he is. And so it's this very deep, again, coming from a person who doesn't have a very strong sense of self. And he is part of her sense of self, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Here's an interesting, I know we don't like doing conjecture too much, but I'm really interested because she's so attached to him, which is her definition of love, or we're having a conjecture on. And it seemed to come on really fast when she was younger because this need for dependency. What do you think she would have done? And I am sorry doing the what do you thinks, but if she had found out about him years ago, do you think she would have done anything about it, or would she turn a blind eye?
If if perhaps before she married him, you know, that might have gotten through to her that this is really a bad idea, and she could have possibly found somebody else to play rescuer for her. But yeah, there may have been, you know, we hear now how adept he was at hiding what he was doing and doing all these murders when she was on vacation. And I'm sure he was very good at that. But what other signs were there? Particularly, I've always thought his sexual behavior with her, you know, there had to be some, Robin's term, leakage. I would guess there was some leakage about his sexual behavior and his interests. And how did she not wonder, what is he doing down in that basement all this time? You know, so I think her denial is thick.
Well, I mean, considering how adept she is today to basically emotionally deny what he is. She may be consciously aware of what he is, but I think emotionally she still lives in the world where Rex is this protector, this family man who rescued her and has been dependable and loyal to her, and in her mind hasn't wronged her. And that's what she clings to and holds on to, because that's 80% of her own identity as well. But the fact that she's so damn adept at denying who he is, even when he's out there, I killed these people. Mm-hmm. And she's still like, Mr. Huberman. Why on earth should we believe for one second that there wasn't glaring signs of what he was up to in that household? And she did exactly what she's doing right now, with far more incentive to do what she's doing right now back then, to not believe it, to not even explore it, to not even register it. And I'm not saying in a way of like, oh shit, I don't want to talk about this because I don't want my world to implode, or I don't want to be in trouble, but more so just like, in one ear and out the other. It just doesn't register as criminal, wrong, bad. It's not something that's not my Rex, basically. I mean, from a third party looking in at this and going, oh God, there's probably 1,000 signs. But because she's so dense in a way, and it's probably the wrong word to use, but just for understanding the way that she's thinking, I don't believe for a second that there wasn't glaring signs in this household and in this life that something is extremely amiss. She just didn't want to explore the amiss. She was happy with the status quo.
Yeah. Yeah. She didn't see it. I've seen that so many cases of child molest by father or stepfather, where women walk into a room and see the naked child and the naked dad, and there's definitely something going on. And he makes an excuse, and she says, oh, okay, and turns around and walks out.
It's a great example.
Yeah.
It really is, and it's like, well, why can't he come for Easter? He's your father. He's your grand, or whatever bullshit. Because you walked in on him doing that to a child, that's why. He shouldn't be breathing air anymore, more or less showing up for ham. You know, that's a great example that probably far more people have experience with over serial killers in their life, of that compartmentalization. And that's what's so scary about what families are capable of doing and telling themselves about the people who share DNA with them. Would that also lean into, because I've been curious about this, Victoria, the daughter, seems to have been the one that leaned into this a lot easier, a lot more. She accepted it sooner than before, sooner than Asa certainly did, that her dad did this pretty clearly, at least in the doc. Asa took a lot longer. I found that fascinating. Why do you think the daughter was more open to this being reality versus mom? It's interesting, in some situations, you know, like in cult situations, people that are born into the trauma world, they're the ones that buy it hook, line, and sinker far more than the people who came from the outside. That's not the case here.
Yeah, I think Victoria did not live with the, I mean, obviously she must have had a bit of an odd upbringing, but she did not live with the abuse that Asa lived with. So denial isn't distributed equally among family members. And I would say her prognosis for moving forward in life is probably better than Asa's. She's just on the continuum. She's a healthier person.
Yeah, because she also didn't make the choice to choose him as a father, and Asa made the choice, and so it'd go against, you know, who she was. I'm curious also, out of, you know, because we watched Asa so much and Victoria on the special on Peacock, how much of that do you think was performative? You know, like that Mr. Huerman, do you think it was performative for the camera, or do you think that actually that was going through her mind?
It is sure possible that, you know, whenever people know there's a camera on them, you get an alteration in behavior. So that is possible. But the Mr. Huerman thing did make sense to me because she was doing that splitting. She was trying to, you know, say, this is a difficult conversation and you are someone else right now, rather than the person that I'm so attached to, the wonderful family man. So it's hard to say.
It's still the
Does that make
family
it,
man.
In dynamics like that, where you have kids and you have parents and you have one that's believing the BS and one that's not. You're right. I mean, she didn't make the choice for that to be her dad. It is what it is. Asa did. Asa made the choice to marry him, have children, all of that with him. I mean, people don't like admitting their mistakes, admitting their faults. I wonder how much of that plays into this cornucopia of wrong with everything else that is at play here. Is this, I mean, that's a big one to admit too, that you have spent the last 20 some years of your life and you've built a life and you've built more lives, more living human creatures on this planet with this monster. That's a hard one to swallow too, of like, oh God, I hitched my boat to the wrong dock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it, you know, to fully acknowledge the reality of this and what he's done and who he is, it contaminates all the memories of her life. It changes everything. You don't look back at the family pictures the same way, you know. Mm-hmm. There's this, I want to say, this dirty tone to everything that you've lived, this ugly tone. Mm-hmm. And that's hard for people to do.
Yeah, the more insecurities you have with it, the harder it is too. One of the great books I love is The Courage to Be Disliked. And part of that book is The Courage to Be Average, you know, is to recognize the fact that, you know what, the vast majority of us on this planet, sorry to say, we're just average people filling a very small role in the big blink of the universe. And it's very hard for some people to really face the fact that I could be wrong with the assessment I made for my entire life about this individual. Yes. And accept it, that kind of self-awareness. But that's why you said she's got this great, hopefully, counselor that she's still seeing that help break down that wall for her so she can have some aha moments in life, maybe, rather than thinking that this is two separate people. No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll see if she's capable of that. Your thoughts so far in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue the conversation there as we continue this conversation here on Rex Huerman Sentencing Day. Rex Huerman strangled 8 women over 17 years and dismembered some of them in his own basement. Then went upstairs and lived life. Planned the killings around his family's vacation schedule. His attorney said the guilty plea brought him a huge sense of relief. Isn't that nice? In court, he said strangulation to every question about cause of death in the same flat voice and never once turned around to look at anyone behind him. The question underneath all of it is whether the normal suburban dad was the mask or whether both versions of Rex Huerman were completely real. One of the disturbing things that we've learned, and people can't really stop talking about, so we'll talk about it for a moment, her bedroom. Now, I mean, she had a bedroom upstairs. Mm-hmm. Yes, they came in and the feds raided and the rest of the house, apparently, you know, that she made better again. The basement was his lair. The basement was the kill room. The basement was his own bedroom. The basement was where he did all of his stuff. After he's out, after the raids are done, after they hire contractors to come in and fix everything up, I can't imagine being those contractors, she chooses to go down to the basement, to his old bedroom, to the room he's admitted was the kill room, where he would take his victims and torture. I mean, it was horrendous. Just the horrendous things that went on in that room. And she's finished it out, put her bed in there, has a bunch of plushies and beanie babies and sleeps in there. that felt disturbing in mm-hmm. that documentary when we mm-hmm. saw that. And I've been sitting with it, and I'm she says that, you know, there'll never be peace for any of this. There'll never be, you know, she used some term of like, there's never going to be peace. And maybe there won't be for her or for anybody. I mean, how do you get on with this? But she says she has nightmares, and she goes down there and she still sleeps every night. It's almost was a weird, I don't know, atonement for her husband's deeds. It kind of felt like, were we watching performative grief and performative atonement in that, where, oh, I'm so troubled by this, this is horrible, and I'm going to take the pains, and I'm going to endure these every night. I mean, there was cameras watching, I get it. And I get, if you're going to be there, and it's your house, and that's what you want to do, and that's what you feel you need to do, then do it. Is that something that needed to be on camera? Or is that, you know, was it performative? Or does Asa not really understand that could come across as rather performative as well if done on camera? I don't know. I feel like Asa is probably the same Asa, camera or no camera.
It's our word of the day, performative in Asa.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she just kind of strikes me as aloof in every stretch of the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely one of the most disturbing scenes down in that room. And I think for most of us, I can't really put myself in that situation, but I think most people, it was like the Dahmer apartment building. You yeah. raise it, you tear it down, you get rid of it. And I think most of us would want that house gone. You know, I mean, it would.
I mean, it sounds like something the killer would do, quite honestly.
Yes.
It doesn't
yes.
sound like something the wife of the killer voluntarily does once he's been arrested. It seems insane. It seems mm-hmm. dangerous. It seems mm-hmm. there's something very screwed up going on here. So I don't want to get, I mean, I'm just kind of done with the, I want to give a bunch of empathy over here. Like I do yeah. to a certain extent, but there is a whole other side to this shit where it's like, I'm sorry, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, are you basking in this? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what the killer themselves would do. Go mm-hmm. and bask in the kill room. Mm-hmm. Not, I mean, so who the fuck are you going in there and doing this? I'm sorry, mm-hmm. it's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, you know, because she said, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, you know, because I watched the interview, the special a couple of weeks ago, didn't she say she wanted to get to know him, that other side of him?
Yes.
And so Siobhan, so if that's part of the healing and her therapist says that might be a good idea, maybe, why? You know, it's like what, and I could see that she's sleeping in that room to get to know that other side of him. What does she want to get closer to? For what purpose?
I would imagine the therapist, I got the sense that the therapist is trying to help her integrate the reality. And I can't imagine the therapist had the idea that going down and yeah. sleeping in that room is a good idea. But everybody's got a different path, right?
There's some yeah. bad therapists out there.
Yeah, and it seems weird, very weird, I think, to most of us, and creepy, and how can this be helpful? Maybe in her mind, she's trying to reclaim her home. You know, she apparently maintains an attachment to Rex. She probably That's has an attachment to that home. And by, you know, making this room kind of this little girl fantasy with beanie babies and a cross on the wall, and does she feel like I'm integrating what happened here, but I'm changing it in some way? I'm yeah. altering it on a gut yeah, level?
Good observation too, because I mean, think about what we'd be saying about it if she didn't remodel that room and was doing it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be saying she's probably healthy and not touching the house. Like I'd be getting, why is she even in the house? Number one.
Right. Yeah, I know.
I mean,
but Siobhan made an interesting point though, reclaiming something, because so she's got, remember, so it's really interesting because Siobhan's already said it.
Yeah.
You know, she defines love as attachment, you know, yeah. and dependency, and part is she doesn't change shit. This is an anti-change agent right here. And if she's trying to reclaim something like her house, that's her only sense of stability is that, you know, that might be the only way maybe she, I don't, like Siobhan says, I don't think she's conscious of it. I just think she's reacting on but weird impulse.
Yeah, I mean, reclaiming is one thing. I mean, reclaiming is something you do when you get out of a bad breakup or something. This is like re-pouring the foundation. This is like restart your life. Nobody should be using the word reclaim with her. It should be straight up, you need to restart. Whole new, fresh. Yeah. Nothing. Yes. We're not revisiting any aspect of your life. It's been 100% a shit show. Every choice you've made has been horrible. You need a restart. Mm-hmm. This is not something about reclaiming or finding something you missed. It's been a failure from day one.
And this is why Tony's not a therapist. Yeah.
Well, exactly. I'd be the, yeah. The Gordon Ramsay is a therapist.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My tendency with so many of these cases, I mean, Wendy Adelson, I mean, all these folks, it's like, change your name.
Yes.
Move out of the country.
Which
go
she's
somewhere.
Done. I mean, she's changed her name. I don't know legally, but she's going by something else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a different
wipe
but,
it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it just seems like everything she's doing to mend her life is just digging her deeper into the existing cesspool that it was. And that's the sick part. Like this woman's not getting help. It doesn't feel like this woman is further digging into the shit show. And I don't think that it's super responsible sitting back and going, oh, this is a healing process for her. I don't think it is.
It's so hard. It's so hard because, you know, there are people who are so, I want to use the word aberrant and damaged, and that may not be the best word, but their best is not very good. And it's never going to be very good. And they're limited in their capacity to grow and get beyond this kind of stuff. It's sad to watch. It's really sad.
And so that goes back to then the question again about the performative side of it, because it is sad to watch, which makes us watch. And think about the fact that if she's trying to do something, it's hard to imagine she's being conscious of this, but I can imagine now because she's acting like this, she's doing this, still living in the house, Peacock is going to go back in and say, what's life like a year after sentencing and living down the room, as opposed to her saying, nope, done with this place, tear it down, I'm done, and she's done.
Well,
they'll never talk to her again.
Yeah, I mean, and we do have to take that into account here is, you know, there's producers involved, and I don't think she has the best decision-making capacity. And if they're like, we want to go down to the basement, and there's probably a lot of questions that were asked and teed up to get the responses that they got. And I can only imagine what's on the cutting room floor and how long. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was pretty easy to get those responses. Who the hell knows? But, you know, we saw probably the most shocking moments of those conversations in that doc, because that's what that doc does. But the fact that they were even said is there. It wasn't like, let me show you the basement. I'm thinking about making it into my bedroom. It's like, she made it into the bedroom. It was set up. I mean, so unless the producers went down there and they all went out to, you know, at home in Hobby Lobby and fixed up the room and made it like that. What, who knows? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe they did. But it's just, it was disturbing. Another big disturbing thing that has been said, and we just mentioned it, Rex saying, a huge sense of relief was brought to him when he pled guilty. Probably a true statement. You know, if you're looking at it from the perspective of Rex Heuermann, it's soulless, it's heartless. But if you're just seeing where emotions are flowing within Rex Heuermann, getting that out probably was a huge sense of relief. Let's talk about that. How do you rate it, Siobhan?
The other, you know, I can see that the pressure with having to keep the secrets and living with the obsessive, you know, the planning and the all the things that he did to avoid getting caught. I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of pressure with that. But on the other hand, you know, these guys are often proud on one level. You know, they're in their dark side, their dark persona. And there may be a sense of pride with, look what I did. You know, yes, I did it. Look, I did.
Yeah, I think the relief he's feeling is the fact that he didn't get charged with a death penalty because they didn't tie any bodies in, was it North Carolina to him? Mm-hmm. And
yet. You
know, yeah, exactly. And he's relieved because now he's got his only currency left in life, as I'm saying, his bucket of information is going to dribble out as he feels he mm-hmm. needs to get some more commissary money or something. You know, relief is an interesting, you know, so that's a question for you, Siobhan. You know, obviously, we don't know testing results or anything, but, you know, someone that is capable of is ranking pretty high in psychopathy, which is pretty, you know, empathy less and very devoid of many emotions. Does relief come into play? In other words, we've defined love differently for every individual. How do you think he defines relief?
Yeah, it's not a sense of, okay, now I don't have to carry the guilt.
The emotional burden.
Yeah, the emotional burden. No, this guy, you're right, perfectly said. He does not feel that. There is, you know, these were never people to him. They're not people now. And these women were objects for him to use. And, you know, he doesn't feel like, oh, now I can process my guilt, you know. Shed the tears.
That's my follow up to that too. So, you know, for all of us watching, does he feel guilt?
No.
See,
no.
So there's no relief from guilt. So it's a relief because the pressure of him being able to keep his bucket of information, that grandiosity, all those things are full still. Because look, I got away with it. I get to live the memory. I get to dump this crap on my wife and daughter, watch their reaction, revel in that. Then I'll get the FBA BAU in to talk to me about how awesome I was. And I still got my bucket of information full. That's relief I think he feels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you think Asa views the victims as people?
Great question.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It would, and that's, I think, a conversation you'd have to have with her.
Yeah.
About it. They did show her at the end of the documentary, I believe, looking at the photos of the victims. And that would be something, if I was her therapist, I would have her do. I would certainly be focusing on the victims. It's just part of trying to get her grounded and get her in reality.
Yes.
Yeah, because
go ahead, Tony.
Because I don't feel like, and I'm not saying it in like she's evil sort of way. I'm saying it in like she doesn't seem to have the cognitive abilities to connect those dots.
They're
names on a sheet. They're names on a charging document. And to truly accept them as living, breathing people, I don't think she'd be acting the way that she does. If that was registering, that seems to be the main disconnect here, is the fact that we're talking about real human beings that your husband murdered, and you're calling him Mr. Huerman and being like flirty and weird. Mm-hmm. Like if you truly registered that as human beings, I that behavior doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. So Siobhan, it looked like, again, kind of riffing on what you said, Tony, it looked like she was trying to humanize them in the doc. She didn't say much, but it was like an effort.
And capable are two different things.
So I'm curious, do you think that's, again, pure conjecture, we only know if on her, but do you think that's because since Rex didn't humanize them, she's incapable at this point as well because she's on his side?
There's yes. Part of the splitting, part of the compartmentalizing that she does. And it's, again, going into the denial, it's very hard to get past that. Yeah. I saw a comment that came through. Is it possible that she has a mild intellectual disability that's getting in the way here? And it is. That's a possibility.
Yeah. Well, pretty complex.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversation about Rex Huerman. Be sure to press subscribe. Sentencing day is today as of our recording of this, and we'll bring you the audio from that. She's skipping sentencing. Asa Elrup is the she I'm talking about. That's the ex-wife of Rex Huerman. She says the day should be about the families after making $1 million, making a documentary about all this. Meanwhile, Valerie Mack's son has filed a lawsuit naming Asa and Victoria alongside Rex, claiming they knew or deliberately looked away and going after a share of the $1 million-plus the family made from the Peacock doc. I imagine there's not much left, quite honestly. I'm sorry. Just attorney's fees and all that shit. I can't imagine that they really had a huge payday at the end of the day. Plus, Uncle Sam's going to take about $300,000 to $400,000 of that. The neighborhood wants the house torn down, and Asa won't leave. That's where we're starting on this part of the conversation. Skipping sentencing because the day should focus on the families. That sounds like the right thing to say. Mm-hmm. Think it's the real reason?
No. Well, you know, and it's possible to have multiple reasons that are all true at the same time. It sounds like something that was a prepared statement, something that sounds right. But the other thing that watching the sentencing would do is, again, hit at her denial.
Yeah.
And it would probably make her very uncomfortable to sit there and have to listen more.
Yeah. And I want to pick up on one of our viewers, Rowena. What an interesting question. Do you think that also because, you know, not wanting to confront this side of Rex, but do you think there's any element to what Rowena's saying? Is there any kind of jealousy she might have because these other girls got that kind of attention from Rex? I mean, do you think any kind of weirdness plays into that?
Yeah.
It sure could be. That could be an element of it. She had said in one of the earlier interviews, I don't think it was in the documentary, but she didn't believe that he would ever want to have sex with another woman. She just couldn't believe that he would utilize, you know, sex workers, because she was enough for him. And obviously, that was not true. There was this other dark side, this rage that was mixed in with his sexuality. And there could be resentment about that. So that's certainly could be one piece of it.
It's going to be very fascinating to watch the deposition of Asa Elrup in the civil suit, if we ever do get a chance to see it. Because Benjamin Torres, who was six when Hiraman killed his mother, Valerie Mack, now suing Asa and Victoria, he's alleging that they knew or deliberately avoided knowing. That's an interesting thing here. I mean, forget the legal question here. I mean, can a person's brain actually choose not to see something that's right in front of them like this? Or is it there? Is it registered? Deliberately not seeing? We've been talking about this in our segments here. I get how one can mentally box it out, but at the end of the day, the data came in. And if you are able to recognize that that data came in and you just didn't process it in some other way, that's not the same as not knowing.
Yeah, people have really strong feelings, you know, all the comments online in various places that she had to know, they had to know. My thinking is that it's you know, denial is not something somebody chooses. It's a survival mechanism. We don't get up in the morning and say, I'm going to choose not to see all sorts of things here today, you know. I always go back to the analogy. Every time we get in a motor vehicle, there's some denial going, right? Sure. Because we don't want to look at car crash mm-hmm. statistics. If we did, we might never get in that car if we, you know, we're out looking at all the accident scenes, but we don't see it. We don't think about it. And I think that the brain is capable of extraordinary acts of not seeing. I call it the negative hallucination, just not the ability not to see what's right in front of you.
I'm just going to swoon over Siobhan again right now. Every week you come out with something that is just such a nice little tight, profound statement. And you know, denial is not something we choose.
And that's that's very true. Because you almost think about the lanes that our brains take when we have various levels of denial, where it's like, no, that's not true, but you know something's true. And then there's just completely unaware or completely, that's not true. You're going to fight to the nth degree that this could have that level of danger. Or we don't seem to process the dangers, like you said, of a car accident, even when you've had someone very close to you die in a car accident. Yeah, I mean, before I was born, my grandparents were killed in a car accident brutally before I was born. And so that's something I knew my whole life growing up. I'm sure most of us know somebody who was. But, you know, it never once has that made my mom or dad or relatives or aunts or uncles not get in a car and drive, or myself, or have fear, because we seem to process that in a different lane than we do other thoughts. And I wonder if sometimes if the trauma is so big and so bad that it skips over all that cognitive reasoning and goes into the other lane of how we would process a car crash and why we still go and drive every day, despite the evidence that someone close to us brutally lost their lives in that same type of vehicle. It's like jumping lanes to a certain extent. Is that kind of what might be going on here?
Yeah, I think jumping lanes is a good way to put it. Yeah. And as I've gotten older, oh man, I drive more carefully than I did. And as a young person, I mean, I would break the speed limit. Sure. I mean, I didn't do anything terribly. I wasn't out spinning donuts or anything like that. But but I definitely was not as cautious as I am now. Yeah. My husband says, "You've started driving like an old lady." I said, I am. older and wiser.
Preserving every minute I still have left on this glorious world. So, Siobhan, you know, it looks like she just defined her love for Rex as this dependence and this neediness that she has. And it sounds like from when they first met to now, it's the same, if not have grown even more, at least what we saw in the documentary. What do you think he was doing to continue to fuel that dependence on him? If obviously it might be conjecture, but are you seeing anything like what kind of things would she need to keep getting from him, to keep fueling the statements that she was making about him to be seemingly as truthful and relevant to her today as they were back when they first met?
Wouldn't that be interesting to have the hidden camera in the household when, before all this came out, and to see the way that they related? My guess is that she accepted breadcrumbs and it didn't take much. You know, a little bit of affection or kindness from him probably went a long way with her. And it's probably not a relationship that most of us would have seen as terribly satisfying. But for a person as empty as she is, a little bit really went a long way.
It's interesting. You know, we've seen trauma bonding in so many other cases, which there was violence and emotional abuse going on, and then the love bombing to keep them hooked in, and then, and then it's more of one and less of the other. Is there such thing of neglect bonding? You know, in other words, could he be so, dismissive of her, which wouldn't maybe necessarily reach the level of what most would consider trauma, but then since he's leaving, like you said, because it just triggered my mind on this when you said breadcrumbs, so he could do those types of things?
Yeah, it certainly could be that there's a part of her that would, somebody who gave her breadcrumbs, and then there's this attempt to get more, always that seeking that if I do this, if I do that, I'm going to get another breadcrumb from him. And so it can be kind of addictive in that sense.
So do you think, because again, a lot of times when we see people that have been trauma bonded and they have that epiphany afterwards when they brought out of him. We see it in all the cult cases we cover. They have these, not all of them, but some of the ones that got lucky, like, oh my God, I was so trauma bonded to this individual because of X, Y, and Z. Yet she seems to still be full of what he gave. It's kind of befuddling to see that she just hasn't let go of the fact that she thinks that bucket of hers of goodwill from him was full.
It's odd.
I think the breadcrumbs are interesting because really, if all he gave her emotionally as a partner back was breadcrumbs while he was a free man, he's really only capable of giving breadcrumbs from prison. It's not like the food supply has changed all that much.
Yeah,
he's points, just behind he's bars. You know, I mean, and I look at like if I honestly, I don't give my dogs a lot of treats. I feed them daily. I give them lots of love. I'm always petting and holding them. But I don't do a lot of treats. So when I do, they think I'm the best damn thing in the world. Oh my God! Mm. And they love it. And it's just, oh, this is amazing. And you know, and there's people too where that could also be working, where when you it's sparsity and there's lack of that, the little bit that you give seems like the whole world to them. So I'm wondering if that dynamic is still very much in play, and the dynamic that we're seeing between Rex and her today, it's probably honestly not that different than what it was when they were living in the same household together. So not a lot's changed other than the world knows what he did.
Yeah, and those phone calls where there's that touch of warmth in his voice, which strikes the rest of us as really creepy, but she smiles. You know, you would notice when she would hear from him and hear that tone, and it had a very, you know, like a guy at work just calling to check in with his wife. I mean, it didn't sound appropriate for what the real situation is.
So if he's given her the breadcrumbs that she's always had and been probably about at the same frequency,
More, honestly.
Yeah, you know, with more depth of conversations because he feels he has to hide less, really. What, you know, if the counselor can't break her free, why would she?
I'm wondering, is this the most appealing version of Rex Heuermann she's ever known?
Yeah,
Not for the crimes that he's committed, but because now she gets all of him. Mm-hmm. Now he can't be out doing this to other people. Now she's 100% hers.
Sick.
Just like the people that date prisoners.
How sick.
You know, that go and people describe that as like, well, you know what? You always know where they are. That's not the reason you should be with somebody, is because you'll be able to keep your thumb on them. That's more a trauma response from people doing horrible things to you, and now you're in control of this. But I do wonder. I wonder if this is the most lovable, appealable version of Rex Heuermann she's ever seen, because he's not going anywhere doing the crazy shit he's been doing. There's no wondering. There's no worrying about that in the back of her mind, and she doesn't have to question anything. It's all right there. And he's more open and probably more loving, and he needs to be if he wants to have an advocate on the outside than he's ever been before.
That's really insightful, because so many guys in prison, how do they hook needy, vulnerable women in? It's the love letters. It's the phone calls. It's the attention.
Feeling
special. And what else do these guys have to do but play games like that, right? And there are vulnerable women that fall for it.
And he's got his own wife doing it. I keep imagining how Peacock can keep playing on this, and she's playing along with it. He's profiting because they're divorced, and so she'll get the proceeds that she can supply the commissary. I mean, and still he hasn't let one new thing out of his bucket of information yet. I hate that he is literally winning in this, because he's getting what he wants in life. Do you think he wanted to ever be an architect? He just wanted to do these horrendous, sadistic things to women. Now he gets to continually live in that fantasy and continually manipulate the hell out of people, including his own wife.
Here's the pitch we got, everybody. We're going to go to Netflix. And we're going to say Heuermann or Hero. It's a game show. And what you do is you present, it's a dating show for Asa, where we present her with like seven different heroes, people who have done wonderful things in life, are by all accounts great human beings, no bad track record, just the perfect specimen of who you would love to start a new life with. And then there's Rex. And then she goes on a date with each one. And then Rex is the counterpoint of the second half of the date. And then she has to decide at the end of the day, does she want to go with the hero or stay with Huerman? And the shocking part of the whole show is every time she goes back to Rex.
Mm-hmm. You can't imagine it going with anyone else.
I think it'd be a big hit. Nick Lachey is going to host it. It's going to be...
That's 1-6 show, man. That would be 1-6 show.
Just got to get rid of a couple of laws to make this a possibility. But,
and ethics, morals, and humanity. Yes.
Exactly. Well, we're getting close. So might as well join the party, right? Anyway, absolutely a fascinating conversation on this sentencing day of Rex Huerman. We'll be watching that, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it more in the coming days, depending on everything that goes down today. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, as always, thank you for being here. Nightbird is her latest book. Go and check
award-winning.
That out. Yes, award-winning. And Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever you get books. Go and check that out. And let me just make a little note to you right now. If you're here on Wednesday at 11 a.m. Central Time next week, Maternal Instinct. We've all watched it.
Yes.
We're all still processing it. And we're going to go through it next week on Wednesday at 11 a.m. live. Of course, you can watch the replays. But if you want to weigh in on that, be here next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Central to join us for that that conversation. It's going to be fascinating. And it's also going to be the last show that I do live before my wedding and before I go off for a honeymoon for like a week and a half.
And before Robin Rex's show when I'm going live with Todd, because that's going to be me.
You'll get Robin the next week and that Monday, too, and some reruns and stuff.
Yes.
It'll be great. I'm not remotely worried about it, but that's... That'll be the last show I do before I head out for all that. And I'll be back in just a few weeks after. But it's a fascinating one, so go do check that out. And, of course, leave your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, and we'll continue our conversations right there. Until next time, for Todd, for Robin, for Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
What's up, Boos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, Boos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.